This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Wong Xiaoning and Philip C. But let's talk about the cabinet lineup in the meantime, because in what some people are calling a wasted opportunity, Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri announced his cabinet lineup last Friday, and it was somewhat similar to that of the previous administration.
The posts of four senior ministers remain, but there is no DPM, Deputy Prime Minister. Only nine government front benches, including Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin, were replaced. In total, there are 69 posts, 31 ministers, excluding the Prime Minister, and 38 deputies. Many have questioned why Ismail Sabri decided to play safe, especially when a confidence and supply agreement with the opposition is almost a given after the encouraging meeting he had with Pakatan Harapan leaders last week.
Now, our Prime Minister has said that the Cabinet's main task is to tackle the health crisis and heal the economy, and they have the first 100 days in office to prove their performance. But with many already labelling this lineup as Muhyiddin's Cabinet 2.0, will we see any drastic changes, especially in our COVID-19 strategy? For some insights into this, we're turning to our political commentator, Dr. James Chin, Professor of Asian Studies at the University of Tasmania. Thanks for joining us again, James. Now, like we said, Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri has given his cabinet lineup 100 days to prove themselves. What do you think of this upfront move, and what might he do to the dead weights at the end of 3 months?
Good morning. So I think it's too early to assess what the 100 days is. This is purely an American invention that you can actually assess a cabinet member's purely after 3 months. The reality is that it's too early to talk about it simply because we don't even know what the KPIs are for the 100 days. But what is clear is that this is an easy or low fruit for him to go for. Because in 100 days, we can expect Malaysia or the majority of adult Malaysians to be fully vaccinated. The numbers will probably go down. So he'll probably claim some sort of victory over the COVID-19 crisis. But in terms of the 100 days, it's really irrelevant to what we're seeing now. So I think what we're seeing now is basically he doesn't want to rock the boat. He understands that he only has 114 MPs. These are exactly the same MPs who supported Muhyiddin. So he doesn't want to rock the boat. He just wants to pass the confidence vote and after that, the budget vote. And any real changes will probably come after that.
It's very interesting because the KPIs might be set by the ministers themselves. But I want to ask your attention, right? What do you think of Dato' Sri Azalinas Othman's exclusion from the lineup? You know, is Ismail Sabri sidelining the 14 UMNO members who stood with UMNO President Ahmad Zahid Hamidi in tracing support for Muhyiddin?
My take is that the cabinet list is actually not the real, not the real indicator what the deals are done. A lot of stuff are actually done outside the cabinet and so-called minister and deputy minister's post. Like I said, he didn't want to rock the boat, so the list is essentially the same. So Zahid and Najib's group, the number one priority is to get rid of the court cases they're facing. So that is the real indicator of any big deals were done. I wouldn't worry about all the small things. Also, coming back to your earlier comment about the number of cabinet posts and how it's 69. Again, that number is actually not a true number because we don't know how many people he's going to appoint in the upcoming days. One of the unusual things in Malaysia is that you can appoint what they call special envoys with ministerial status. So basically, you are a full minister. The only difference is that you don't attend cabinet meetings, but you have an input into the cabinet. You get all the cabinet meeting papers and so on. So really, in terms of the numbers, I think we shouldn't be obsessed with the numbers. But it is clear that the strategy he's using is essentially the same strategy he used from the previous government, which is to appoint as many supporters to as many senior positions as possible, keep them sweet, so that they won't turn against him.
And why do you think Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri skipped the Deputy Prime Minister post altogether this time?
Sure. So I think he skipped it for the simple reason that he didn't want to rock the boat. If you had to appoint a Deputy Prime Minister's post, then you will have a big problem with your coalition partner. Who do you give it to? Do you give it to Bersatu, which is supposedly the second biggest party in the coalition? But that party is under threat because you're trying to bring the former UMNO defectors back to your party? Or do you give it to East Malaysia? They've been asking for a long time. Since it is politically unacceptable at the present moment to give it to East Malaysia, this means you probably have to create two deputy prime ministers' posts. DPM1 given to somebody from Malaya and DPM2 given to Sabah and Sarawak. Again, leads to all sorts of complications. You don't want to rock the boat. So why create a DPM post? Just go with the old formula of four senior ministers.
So rock the boat he did not, but do you think he has met most of the demands from all the different parties?
The answer is no. Of course, there are lots of people who are unhappy out there. But I suspect they will give him some sort of honeymoon period. So as I said, nothing will happen until after the full budget is passed.
So James, what does the cabinet lineup tell us about what kind of Prime Minister Ismail Sabri will be?
We don't really know. All we know is that he's making all the right noises now. So for example, very early on, he invited the key opposition leaders from Pakatan Harapan to meet him in the office. They took a nice picture standing there. And there's lots of noises about all these things like the CSA and what have you. But we don't really know. What we do know is that he has to hang around or he has to stay in power at least until the general election, which is likely to be held next year. Mm. So if there's going to be any moves, it will be done after the budget.
So nice pictures, nice votes. So we expect the confidence vote to be really straightforward affair then?
Not really. My take is that he will have to keep the 114 people on his side and any votes for the opposition will be regarded as a bonus. The reality is that he can still get through 114. He actually doesn't need the opposition vote as long as he is confident that the 114 will stick with him. My take is that it's highly unlikely that the opposition will vote for him, given the anger in the community. They might abstain for the vote, I don't know. But the reality is that I think it will be very, very difficult for the opposition to justify supporting him in a confidence vote. Because what will happen is that people will keep reminding the opposition at the next GE.
Now, James, I want to talk about one cabinet reshuffle, which was between Khairi Jamaluddin and Datuk Sri Dr. Adam Baba. Now, what does it say about Khairi's position within the party?
It simply means that Khairi is very popular in the public. That was basically a populist move. But I have to say, I was a bit surprised that he did not dump Adnan Baba, because if he had gotten rid of Adnan Baba, that would have been very popular as well. So this comes back to my earlier point that he really did not want to rock any boat at all. But moving Khairi up to the health position was a very populist move, and it is widely seen as a promotion. But at the same time, it's also a poison chalice because Khairi's success was actually not in the health issue. It is more in a logistical issue, as in his success was basically to procure more vaccines for Malaysia and setting out the what they call the huge vaccination centres where the public can walk in, where hundreds and thousands of people are vaccinated daily. So that is really not health issues per se. It's not the sort of thing that the health ministry is about. So, as far as I know, health ministry is one of those funny ministry where there are lots of cliques inside because it's a highly specialized field. Mm. So I suspect unless Khairi get a grip on the situation very quickly, he will have some difficulty as the health minister.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was political commentator Dr. James Chin, Professor of Asian Studies at the University of Tasmania, giving us his views on the new cabinet, or as some would say, a cabinet reshuffle, which is the answer of our poll, because we asked this morning on Twitter, will the new cabinet make any remarkable changes in managing COVID-19 and improving the economy? 73% said no, it's just a reshuffle. 13% say let's wait and see. 7% say maybe, some, not all. While 5% say, yes, give them a chance.
I think the fact that this really has been not a big change in the previous cabinet, I think maybe suggests that he doesn't have the boldness, right, or the support.
For the moment.
Or the confidence that he can get it through. As you say, even this current cabinet, as Dr. James Chin was saying, doesn't have everybody endearing and loving it so much. I think he's just kind of making it work and status quo for the moment.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.